Welcome to Let's Chat Parenting, a podcast for parents who want to be in the know. Hi, I'm Sarah Jane Creech, and I work with the student ministries at Orangewood Church, PCA, in Maitland, Florida. Today we're talking to one of my favorite people about one of my favorite things. Taylor Kelly's here. Taylor is our high school coordinator and is working to create spaces for students to explore their stories and see how those stories interact with God's big story. Hey, Taylor.
Hey, Sarah Jane, how are you?
Good. This morning at our Let's Chat Live event, you started our conversation with a psalm. And so I was wondering, maybe we could just start with reading that, and you could give us a few of your thoughts about that this morning.
Absolutely. So this is from Psalm 78, starting in verse 1. Give ear, O my people, to my teaching. Incline your ears to the words of my mouth. I will open my mouth in a parable. I will utter dark sayings from of old, things that we have heard and known, that our fathers have told us. We will not hide them from their children, but tell to the coming generation the glorious deeds of the Lord and his might and the wonders that he has done. He established a testimony in Jacob and appointed a law in Israel, which he commanded our fathers to teach to their children, that the next generation might know them, that children yet unborn, and arise and tell them to their children, so that they should set their hope in God and not forget the works of God, but keep his commandments. And just a thought, so that was verse 1 through 7 of Psalm 78. And a thought that I had about that, for all of you who are listening who are parents, I have so much respect for you. I'm really thankful for my parents. They have really loved me well, and I think really cast vision over me from a young age for what it looks like to be a godly man. And we'll talk more about that in a couple of moments, but just want to speak to those of you who are parents and say, this is a huge and very high calling, and I have so much respect for that. And just as I was reading Psalm 78 this past week, it's one that has always been a favorite of mine, but was looking back at it and just very aware that this is more than just about your children today, tomorrow, the next day. It is about that, absolutely, but it's also about casting vision over your family and legacy, and not only for your children, but for hopefully their children and their children and their children, and that your children would know the love of Jesus and would know that you love them, and that that would really impact the way that they are loving the people around them. And eventually, if the Lord gives them children, that they would be able to put those same things into practice.
Yeah, I think it's huge to think that we are all part of a bigger story, and that it kind of gives a little bit of help in the thought of, like, I'm not going to really screw this up. In the grand scheme of things, God's going to be faithful to us as part of his family. But in the same way, like, we do have a role to play with our children from a young age of casting vision over them.
Absolutely.
And so I was kind of thinking, like, what does that look like for a preschooler to have vision cast over their life? And then how does that change kind of through the ages?
Right.
For a child, because I think if we're thinking about how to raise a healthy adult this semester,
right,
that starts at childhood. That isn't like something that starts at 15, now you can drive, so I'll start talking to you about being an adult. So I don't know, do you have any thoughts about that, like, for the parents of the really young kids that are
absolutely
listening?
I think that's a really cool vision and a thought to say, you know, it doesn't just all of a sudden kick in when they're middle schoolers. And it's easy to think that way. But I think the first thing that comes to my mind is collaboration, honestly, which is a big word for me. I really love the concept of doing things together and getting to struggle together and getting to learn together. And so I think, you know, something that my parents did really well, and I see a lot of parents that do well, is the concept of really explaining to their children why they're doing things and what they're doing. And that could be anything from, you know, we have a Sabbath day in our week. I remember my parents talking to me about that from a very young age and explaining, why do we do that? God commanded us to take a day of rest and we want to be obedient to him. And then going a step further, what does that look like? What are different ways that we can remember the Sabbath day and keep it holy? That's one thing that comes to my mind. But I think that that applies in a lot of things, whether it be chores, like, hey, this is my preschool son, and rather than doing all of these things completely separate from him, what if I invited my preschooler to help with the chores, even though can't do most of it?
Yeah.
But that's not the point. It's the opportunity to, even from that very early point, to be training them and speaking things out of, this is the why, this is the how, and these are the specifics of the way that we're living.
Mm-hmm. And I think partly what that takes, as I'm thinking about it, is just intentionality and being willing to stop what you're doing and explain to your child how and why. Because I think that takes time.
Absolutely.
And, but first, I think it's a matter of parents seeing what kind of family dynamic do we want to have. Do we want to have one where mom is raggedly working and not inviting other people into that work with her? And that dad just goes to work and comes home? Or do we want to show how we're partnering together in all of the ways? And do we want our kids to know that they have a place in this family and it's not just to be bossed around?
Absolutely.
And I think so often in today's world, and I probably have more opinions about this than other people maybe, but I think we are so busy that we are just surviving. And I totally get that. And the world says that we just need to be busier. And so I think partly what casting vision over our families looks like is stopping and saying, we are not going to just survive.
Yes.
We are going to fight to thrive together, and part of that is slowing down.
Absolutely.
I was thinking about your example of the Sabbath, and I was like, do people have Sabbath anymore?
Right, right.
And my guess is for most of the families...
Probably not.
Sabbath. Probably not. It's not, at least it's not a sacred day.
Right.
It might be a day where church is a part of it, but it's not actually set apart.
Right.
And I think, like, if we look at the biblical way for Sabbath, it is for God to continue to heal his people every week, for them to rehearse God's story. And it is naturally very set apart. And so I think it's a good thing for us to think through, what do we want the vision of our family to look like? And what things do we want to be a part of it from the time our children are born to the time that they go off to college and beyond?
And I think, you know, it's a really cool thing to think about, even when you have children who might be elementary schoolers, to say, we want to, as the parents before God, be casting vision, us casting vision for our children. And the reality is, if as parents, we're not casting vision over our students and our children, someone else will. And I think I realize a lot, I hear about people saying, you know, well, my fourth graders' friends have cell phones. And so they're coming into our home saying, well, I should have a cell phone because my friends in my class all have cell phones. And that's one of many examples of just, are we going to let family vision be cast by other people, friends in classes, or the culture around us that's dictated through social media, through TV, through all of these things? Or is it going to be, hey, we're a team and the Lord has given us an opportunity to make decisions together as a team. And I think it's really exciting to think about, if you're a parent who has a preschooler, what are the ways that you can start planting seeds now that by the time they are in middle or high school, to see, wow, those have been watered and are already growing, so that they understand as a middle or high schooler why, as a family, you're doing some of the things that you're doing.
Yeah, I think about one of the families that I work with specifically, they are really, really busy. And a lot of times the seventh grader can't come to youth group. And what's crazy is it's not because of their schedule, but it's because she knows her boundaries. And she knows, like, I can't do this today. And so I'm going to just be at home and rest. And I think that's the best excuse for missing.
That sounds youth very group mature.
In the whole world. I'm like, yes, please do that.
Absolutely.
But that takes space for parents to say, what is your personality?
Mm-hmm.
What do you need? Because there are some kids that don't need any time alone and who actually thrive when they're not alone. And it's like a practice to get them to have space alone.
That would be me.
Right. And not me at all. But I think growing up, I felt like I was an introvert living in an extroverted world that didn't feel right about being an introvert. And so I constantly felt that need for withdrawal and for rejuvenation. But my world did not provide it for me. And I don't think my parents knew that about me because I'm social. And so I don't think they knew that, like, I really truly needed time alone. And so I never had it growing up. And I always felt a little bit, like, anxious and like my life was just this, like, spinning chaos.
Right.
So, but I do think that's partly even just helping your children know who you are, who they specifically are, and the process is helping them become better adults in the end. And not have to, like, for me, I had to then, like, undo all these extroverted habits that I had made to say, no, I actually need that space alone in order to rejuvenate. So, I think that's really cool. One of the things that we heard you talk about this morning is just the idea of, like, what playing and exploring, how that practice of playing and exploring can actually help your children in the end be better adults. And so I was just wondering if maybe we could talk about that
a little bit. I think about when I was in middle and high school specifically, and not because of my parents imposing this, but just the culture that I was living in as a middle and high school student. And if that is the case, so much more so now for today's middle and high school students. I just felt like there was this mentality that said, you can't rest. You can't take time to do anything that's not productive. Especially entering the tail end of high school. And we talked some this morning about the college process to choosing a college and applications and scholarships and all of those things that are so good, but can so quickly become just this huge weight that is pressing students down. And I'm aware of how difficult it was for me, even with parents who were encouraging me to take space, to take a Sabbath in my week, to take times of day where I wasn't doing anything productive and also didn't have my phone out. And I think it's so huge to have that space because, honestly, I think there's a lot of students who are going on months and even years where they haven't really checked in to say, how am I? What is my mental and spiritual and my heart health right now in the midst of all the things that are going on? And so I long for students to feel more freedom. I think I like to think about a lot the concept that play is a form of worship. And I think play is for kids, which is a funny statement to say. Play for children is an increasing dying art. And I think that we have a responsibility as adults to say, this is such a unique season of your life. As whether it be elementary school, middle school, high school, take time to just enjoy it and take time to say, there's always more details that we could be exploring about school or about college or about a job or whatever it might be. But what are the spaces in your week or your month where you just say, hey, let's take a pause, put those things to the side? And I think taking it even to the next level is, where are you as a parent inviting your student to do that with you? I think some of my fondest memories with my dad specifically are moments where in the midst of all the craziness, we just literally got to go throw the football and talk and be together. And I think that that's sadly something that doesn't happen a lot anymore. Mm-hmm. And so I encourage parents, not that you're not already doing this in some forms, but find the ways that you can invite your children to play with you mm-hmm. and to rest with you and to do those things in a way that is really intentional.
Yeah. I'm even just thinking about a friend that I saw yesterday who they let their kids determine the Halloween costume that they all did, but they all participated.
Yeah.
And so they were from the Troll movie, and the parents dressed up as, like, crazy people. And she said that she looked at some point and was like, did I really just make myself this ugly? And she was like, but I did, because it was, like, what my kids wanted. It was a way for us to play with them.
And buying in to that instead of standing at a distance from it and saying, this matters to us because it matters to you.
Right. Yeah, and I think it's, like, that beautiful thing of saying, we're going to let your mind work, and we're going to let your creativity come to life, and then I'm going to participate with you in the creativity. And, like, celebrate that with you, because this is fun, and this is healthy, and this is life-giving. And I think as parents, we want to enter into life-giving places with our students, which is cool. Even if they're in preschool and want to dress up like trolls.
Yes.
So cute. Yeah, and I think that idea of exploring is something that actually brings a lot of rest for the soul through nature and through just imagination and other things. And I actually think that if I read this book called Union with Christ, and it's by Rankin Wilburn, and he starts out the whole thing basically saying that faith takes it accesses the same part of our brain that imagination does. Mm. And as kids, imagination is something so beautiful and something so celebrated. Mm. But as we get kind of more connected to our frontal cortex, like we become less and less able to access that part of our brain. But faith needs that part of our brain. So I think it's a huge place to say, and faith is very real and God is very real, but because we don't know everything about him and because he is not as tangible as food, like, we have to use our imagination in some senses. And so Rankin's like, please, please, please access that part of your brain when you think about faith. And
I like that so much.
Yeah. To me, I was like, what? So I think it's a beautiful thing to explore as a family and with your family in that. So one of the things that I think you said that I thought was really cool was talking about the discipleship. We've talked often about the discipleship model on this podcast, of the idea of, I'm going to do something for you, then I'm going to do something with you, then I'm going to watch you do it, and then I'm going to let you go do it. And how beautiful of a discipleship model that is for parents to kind of have vision over that with their kids. But something that you said in that was that discipleship is not about perfection. It's about multiplication and transformation. And I was wondering if I loved that. Mm-hmm. And so I was wondering if you could kind of talk a little bit about that as our last point today.
Absolutely. I think one of my favorite things to think about lately in regards to Jesus and his story is just what his relationship was like with his disciples. And something that I mentioned this morning was that if Jesus wanted to have the most efficient, the most concise, the most effective ministry, it's easy to think, well, he had the disciples because he wanted to have a bigger group of people that could help him do what he was doing. They could meet more people and help more people, and everything would be a lot quicker and more efficient. But when we look at the biblical narrative, we know that's the furthest thing from the case. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the times, Jesus is spending energy telling, retelling, retelling the disciples that, hey, this is what I'm about. I am the Son of God. I am doing these things in order that I might be obedient to my Father and walking these things out before them. And yet they're still so confused. Mm-hmm. And even after he performs miracle after miracle, they turn around and they wonder where they're going to get their next meal from. And I say all that to say, you know, Jesus was not concerned about perfection in his discipleship with the 12 disciples that he lived his life with. He was concerned about multiplication and transformation, and that meant being patient with them. That meant letting them struggle. That meant being present with them and continuing to speak truth again and again, and not reaching a point where he was fed up and said, you know what, Peter, it seems like you just can't get this, and I've tried to communicate to you what I'm about. I think that we're going to have to just call it quits. I mean, obviously that's not the case.
Yeah.
But I think there's something so beautiful that parents can offer their students of saying, I want to show you the love of Christ. And part of that means that the discipleship that I am practicing with you as my child is not concerned with you getting it right the first time or you getting it right the 100th time. It's far more concerned about heart formation and you growing as a person and as a child of God and being more about who you are, not what you do.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard my parents say many times to me, there's nothing you can do that will make you there is nothing that you can do that will make me love you less or more than I do right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I think just communicating that, it's, you know, love is not performance based.
Mm-hmm.
And so much of the world around all of us, but especially students, says you have to do X, Y, Z to make the cut, to be good enough and to be relevant. And what would it look like as parents to say to your children, you are my child and I love you, and that's the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all. There's no but.
Mm-hmm.
There's no, it's not a conditional statement.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
What would it look like for us to ask God to help us to cast that vision over our students?
Yeah, I think part of that is asking God to cast that vision over our own lives, especially when we haven't had parents who said that to us.
Mm-hmm.
And so as parents, we've talked often on this podcast about being kind of checking in and saying, like, how is it with me? And so I think that's like a huge space that we get to ask God into that and say, you know, Lord, I don't feel this as true in my own life, but I need you to transform me so that I can be intentional with my kids in this specific area, because we want them above all else, we want them to be great adults, but above all else, we want them to know that God loves them and that they cannot lose that love. So, yeah, thanks, Taylor.
Absolutely.
I loved this conversation, and I hope that we get to have more conversations in the coming months about what discipleship looks like as parents with their teenagers.
I look forward to it.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
Thank you for joining us today. We hope that you found this conversation informational and helpful, a tool to help you move just one step further into intentional parenting with your kids. If you want to know more about our Let's Chat Live events or our podcast, please visit us at www.orangewood.org/Let's Chat.